You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
World Vision New Zealand launched a campaign this week calling on Jacinda Ardern to negotiate the resettlement of 119 refugee children and their families to New Zealand at this year's Pacific Island Forum. The children are right now being detained on Nauru, the small island nation in Micronesia, northeast of Australia. Nauru has drawn international attention in recent years due to a humanitarian and health crisis facing the refugees forced to remain on the island while Australia decides their fate. Alice spoke with James Harris, Community Engagement Manager for World Vision New Zealand, who spent time on Nauru working with the refugees. She began by asking him to explain where these kids and families come from and how they ended up there.
There are a whole lot of people from a whole load of countries that have sought protection in Australia. So they've fled from persecution and war, in some cases certain death, from countries like Syria, Somalia, Iran, Iraq, Sudan, just all sorts of conflict zones and hotspots for persecution. Each year, less than 1% of refugees are resettled, which leaves people with little choices. So as we began to see in Europe, we're sort of seen with Australia as well, where people had made their way to Indonesia, mostly, and from Indonesia were taken on little rickety boats to a place called Christmas Island. And Christmas Island is just off the coast of Jakarta, that is Australian territory. So once people get there, they're able to claim asylum in Australia. So in 2013, Australia brought in a law saying if you arrive by boat after July 19th, 2013, you'll never be resettled in Australia. And before, what will happen from then is you'll be taken from Australia to either Manus Island in Papua New Guinea or Nauru, which is the smallest republic in the world besides the Vatican. And you'll be processed there and you'll be detained there until you're settled in a third country. So far the only third countries are Cambodia, who has paid $55 million to settle 7 refugees, which is nuts. Yeah. And there was a deal done with Obama to settle up to 1,250 refugees from Nauru and Manus Island. So far, under 200 have gone, but it's obviously now hindered by the travel ban that President Trump has brought in. So anyone from Iran, Syria, Somalia, Yemen, and a bunch of other countries will never be included in that deal. So it's moving at a glacial pace at this point.
You spent a few years there, is that correct?
Yeah, so I was in Nauru from 2012 to 2014. I was there firstly with the Salvation Army and then moved over to Save the Children. Both the organisations were outspokenly opposed to what was happening, but said if the refugees are going to be there, then we want to be on the ground with them, caring for them. So the majority of the time I was with Save the Children as a youth worker, working with 30 unaccompanied minors. So they'd come from Afghanistan, Iran, there was Rohingyas from Myanmar, and Tamils from Sri Lanka, and they'd had to flee, but they'd left without a parent or a guardian. So my role was sort of as a youth worker supporting them as they were in detention in such a crazy circumstance.
Wow, they were, how young were they?
All of them were 15 and 16 at the time.
Wow, and they were by themselves.
Yeah, really strong, resilient young men. They were all guys, but it was extremely, extremely tough.
Yeah, what is life like for them? What is daily life like? Where do they get food and what do they do? And
so when I was in Nauru, when the first family started arriving, so at that time everyone was in, they had what they called like offshore processing center 3, where they were housed. And the middle of, so Nauru as a country was mined for phosphate, tiny little rockets, 21 square kilometers. So the entire middle of the country is sort of a desolate mine. And in the middle of the mine is where the processing centers were, or the detention centers. So it's a desolate landscape with very, very little plant life. Like everything was sort of gravel, and people lived in sort of big white marquee tents, and there'd usually be about 6 families to a tent. So it'd be little, probably sort of 3-4 square meters per family, separated by wood and tarpaulins. And and they weren't able to leave the detention centre at that point. So life was really simple. Food was provided at the detention centre. There were English lessons for the adults, and there was a school run by Save the Children for the kids. It took time, but people began to be found to be refugees. And as that happened, people were slowly moved to sort of compounds in Nauru where they had a bit more freedom of movement. But there's not a lot for anyone to do. So I think a lot of people pass time trying not to lose their sanity, but it's pretty hard in a situation like that.
Do they have access to any kind of resources to pass the time? Or
there's not a whole lot available. There are, you know, some people still play sport. For those that are free, they can, that know how to, they can swim, which is amazing. I had a few moments where there's that scene in Shawshank Redemption, I'm not sure if you've seen it,
yeah,
where they're sitting on the rooftop and drinking beers because they've just, you know, helped with that guy's accounts or whatever it was. And he's like, for a moment, we forgot where we were. And that was one of the things that was beautiful, being able to go swimming a couple of times with some of the guys, that for a moment you could see they'd forgotten where they were. So there are, in amongst the harrowing circumstance, it's people, and people are beautiful and resilient. So there are those moments of beauty and resilience in amongst it, but it's really tough. But in terms of, yeah, things to do, there's really not a whole lot, to be honest.
Do they interact with the local, how would you say it, Nauruans?
Yeah, they do, and the Nauruan people are amazing, but there was no consultation with their government and between their government and the local people for the detention centre opening. So it's a bizarre circumstance where you have a local population of around 10,000 people in 21 square kilometres, and now there's close to 1,000 refugees. So it's the local people didn't ask to be there. So in a weird way, they've sort of been colonized by refugees who don't want to be there. So there's tension at times because the local Nauruans are proud of Nauru, and they should be. But you have 1,000 people saying, this place isn't good enough, I don't want to be here. So there's tension, and there's definitely tension there. Just after I left for the last time, the unaccompanied minors had just been moved. To the young guys that I worked with, they had just been moved from the detention centre to a house in the community. And I saw in the news the week after that two of them were put in hospital by locals who confronted them for being Muslim and beat them up. So, yeah, it's definitely not as unsafe as the community in Papua New Guinea where the men in Manus Island are. But, it's definitely not the ideal situation.
Do you understand what the agreement between the Australian government and Nauru?
Yeah, so I don't know all the details of it, but yeah, so this first happened under the Howard government in Australia. So it started in 2001 and went to 2008 and then started again in 2012. One of the things that's problematic is that it's essentially the national industry now is detaining refugees. Nauru itself, there's not major industries, so they're sort of stuck. So I don't know, the details. One of the things that was announced was that anyone that wouldn't be accepted in the US deal would potentially just be given a 20-year visa for Nauru. Initially, what happened was the Cambodia deal was really being pushed, but people had to sign to say that they would go. But a lot of people didn't sign for the Cambodia deal because Cambodia once was paid off by China, because Cambodia is a signatory to the Refugee Convention. So they do have refugees that go there, and there were a group of refugees from China who had gone that I think were political dissidents, and the Cambodian government was paid by the Chinese government to round them up and put them on a plane and send them home, which happened. So I think because of their treatment of refugees in the past, people didn't want to sign the deal. And so what they did at that stage was they're like, okay, well, they extended the length of everyone's visas for Nauru so that people thought, oh, if Cambodia is the only option, then potentially we'll be able to go to Australia. But that didn't seem to work out.
What is the Pacific Islands Forum?
So the Pacific Islands Forum happens annually. This is the 49th annual Pacific Islands Forum coming up in just a couple of weeks. So it's a chance for leaders from all the Pacific nations and Australasia to come together in a different country each time and to discuss regional cooperation and economics and how we can best work together. Things like climate change have come up at the forum in the past. Yeah, so this year it is being hosted by Nauru. So it's happening from September 3rd to 6th. And Jacinda Ardern confirmed yesterday that she'll be attending.
And does she have the power to bring them to New Zealand?
It has to be accepted either by the Nauruan government or the Australian government. So the offer's been put on the table for us to take 150 refugees from either Nauru or Manus Island in Papua New Guinea. It was first offered by John Key and was turned down, and then was offered again by Jacinda Ardern when she first met Malcolm Turnbull, and again it was turned down. The second time it was turned down, they said it was on the grounds that they would consider our offer once the deal with the United States to resettle up to 1,250 people was completed. But we know, however, that that's hindered by Trump's travel ban, so a large majority of those people won't be able to be considered in the US deal. That's why World Vision is calling on Jacinda Ardern at the forum to offer to immediately take all 119 children and their families to New Zealand, because we can't wait around for the US deal, particularly because of the travel ban.
And that is possible for that to happen.
It is possible, and there's the precedent of New Zealand under Clark's leadership taking the people from the Tampa boat who weren't let into Australia, were taken to Nauru and then brought to New Zealand. So we've done it before, we can do it again.
Do you know if there are Australian NGOs that are pressuring their government to do something similar during this forum?
Yes, the same time that we launched the campaign, World Vision Australia launched a similar campaign under the same name of Kids Off Nauru. So their call was that Australia would resettle all children and their families to safe third countries or bring them to Australia by Universal Children's Day, which is November 20th. So that was led by World Vision Australia, but 30 other organisations came in behind it. So it's a coalition of NGOs making that call in Australia.
Is there anything, if people are listening to this and feel compelled to do something, is there anything individuals can do to put pressure on or raise awareness, or what do you suggest?
Yeah, people can visit wvnz.org.nz/kidsoffnauru. When you're there, you can read more about the situation and also see a video by a guy called Abbas Nazari. Abbas Nazari came to New Zealand as a child from the Tampa boat that was sent to Nauru and then was settled in New Zealand. So he has a call directly to Jacinda Ardern there. But also from that website, you can send Jacinda Ardern a Facebook message. And it's important right now that she's hearing our voice, the voice of the people saying we want the kids off Nauru. So yeah, you can head to that address and make your voice heard.
Is there anything else you want to add?
A story that sticks out for me from my time in Nauru was quite often I would have young people sort of that I would be chatting to, and it would come up that I was Kiwi. And quite often the refugees being detained by Australia think they loved New Zealand. One girl once said to me that she was beginning to learn Te Reo Māori from some of the security guards. And she, I just remember it so clearly, with the detention centre fences like towering over us, who were like looking at me and saying, Kia kaha, which is, you know, be strong, be brave. That's sort of my message for Jacinda Ardern and for New Zealand in this time, that kia kaha, like we can do this, like we can be strong and brave and stand up to injustice.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.